Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tilamane. Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharane, Nivasesha Sunyavadi, Praskati Dejitak. Please tell me, if you remember, what is the essence of yesterday's talk at this time? Raise your hand. Okay, we'll make it easier. Who remembers anything? Yes, you looked at your book. Okay, that's all right. Okay, say something about the pastime. What happened? What happened yesterday? They moved to Vrindavan. Where did they go from? Gokul. And how did they travel? Bullock. And why did they go to Vrindavan from Gokul? Raise your hand though. Because Upananda, you didn't raise your hand, but it's all right. Yes. He instructed them. He advised them. And what was his reasoning? There's so much. Yes, and Vrindavan is such a safe place. It is so green and luscious, and very, very, very special. So then, the boys. Do you remember that part? It sticks in my mind how after they came across the river Jamuna on their carts and in their boats, then for the first time, Krishna jumped from the cart and he wasn't wearing any shoes. And his soft, pinkish lotus feet touched the dust of Vrindavan for the first time. Do you remember that? And what happened? Vrindavan, it blossomed immediately. Why? Due to ecstasy, being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna. Because this is, we see this in the 15th chapter of the 10th canto when Krishna begins his cowherding pastimes. He enters with the cows and the boys. He enters the Vrindavan forest for the first time. That very, very beautiful verse, Baharpidam Natavara Vapu Kanayo Kanikaram, how Krishna is dressed at that time in his yellow, lightning-like yellow garments, his dhoti, and he's wearing a wonderful turban, and atop his head is a peacock feather, and he's playing his flute, and he has a garland of forest flowers that the Vajayanti Mala, it is so long, it goes down to his knees, and I believe there are five, it's always composed of at least five different color flowers. And then as Krishna's walking, the garland is swaying due to his walking, because he walks in such a graceful way. And he's playing his flute, and he's filling up the holes. Gopa Vrindaya, one of the Gopa, the cowherd boys, they're walking with him in Girtikirti. They're chanting his glories there. They can't keep their minds from Krishna. And this is the characteristic of all the residents of Vrindavan. Just naturally and spontaneously, they think of Krishna. And they just don't only think of Krishna as a meditator, or just think of Krishna in his heart and how beautiful he is, but the depth of their affection for him is so great that it manifests as always as a desire to serve him. And according to their staibhav, according to their fixed relationship with Krishna on the spiritual platform, They want to serve him either as servant, as friend, as parent, or in Shringaras or Madhuryaras, as lover. But it's all a matter of service. So this concept of pure service with no self-interest, no swartha, no selfishness is so foreign to this world. And even if there is someone who wants to perform altruistic activities, what's an altruistic activity? Charitable activity. Such a person, because the selfishness is basically so much less, such a person is held in the highest esteem in this world when one is acting for the benefit of others. What to speak of acting solely for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is such a high ideal, and we should keep this ideal, cherish it in our hearts. And this is the essence of devotional service, anya abhilasita sunyam, with no other desire other than to please Krishna. Jnana kama anavrita anakulena Krishna anasilanam. This is the kind of bhakti, this type of pure devotional service that is so unselfish, and it is meant for Krishna's pleasure. It has the quality of being able to please Krishna, because it is actually meant for Krishna's pleasure. And because it pleases Krishna, the result of this kind of devotional service is prema bhakti. This is the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Srila Rupa Goswami, of Srila Jiva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, that do something for the pleasure of Krishna. And that brings the result that we're actually looking for. And if our bhakti is mixed, something for Krishna, and of course, naturally, I also need something out of it too, subtly or grossly, I want something out of it, then Krishna is not actually pleased by such devotional service, and the result of such devotional service is we get the result, but it will be in this world. We'll get what we want. Yayatam mam prapadyante. Krishna is the absolute truth. There is nothing outside of him in existence. And however we approach him, even from the point of view of being a materialist, wanting something of the material world, not even accepting I'm going to Krishna for this, then Krishna will reciprocate. And the different religions of the world, there are different, the followers of that religion are obviously getting some realization by it. And this is Krishna reciprocating with them. But where is it seen that the devotee and the Lord will have such an intimate relationship that the Lord himself, practically speaking, is giving himself. He's conquered. Ajita jito pyasitas trilokyam. The unconquerable Supreme Lord becomes subservient to his devotee, and he's dancing for what price? A half a sweet, not even an entire sweetmeat. He's dancing, he's carrying things on behalf of when his mother, and when there's that, I think it's the second verse in that, in this 11th chapter, it explains that it's the one who's asking Krishna, please bring this to me, carry this for me, bring this to me. It's Srimati Radharani's grandmother, Mukara, who plays an important part in some of the intimate pastimes of Krishna. And then all the ladies are chastising her after that. Why are you asking this little boy to do so many things? He's the son of a prince. He's this, he's that. So much rasa, so much mellow, so much taste is generated from these activities. But the essence of rasa, or for taste to be generated, is that there has to be a relationship. And I had mentioned previously, it's like if we watch a documentary, And in that documentary, one sees, you know, bombs going off and people crying and so many things are injured. And so many people can watch that in the news and they're sitting there eating popcorn and, oh, very interesting. But soon as it's someone you know there, when there's a relationship, then so much emotion, fear, terror, unhappiness, great sadness is generated because of the relationship. So that's the relationship established with Krishna that causes, that is the basis that causes rasa to be generated, is called the staibhav, as explained by Srila Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So yet, although we may not be on that platform, which is actually Bhava Bhakti, but we can hear about it and just try to understand in our own way, or don't even try to understand, just try to taste or feel the sweetness of what's going on in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. So when Krishna comes to Vrindavan, they cross which river to come to Vrindavan? Which river? Jamuna River, does anyone remember the tree that couldn't bear the separation of Krishna and left? Bandiravan. And that tree was so wonderful. It grew on one side of the river, on the western side of the river. We are on the eastern side. That Keshigat, for example, but it grew on the other side of the river, and it grew in such a way that it the branches crossed to the other side of the river. It was so huge, and the area around the Bandiravat in the waters of the Yamuna, it was filled with fragrant lotus flowers, and the cowherd boys especially, when they wanted to cross the river, they would cross on the branches and they would cross to the other side, and they would come up on the river and they would jump into the waters of the Jamuna. And in this way, it was so, their life was filled with ecstasy, because Vrindavan's whole purpose is to please Krishna. And when Krishna enters the forest blossoms in ecstasy, making its gifts, its offerings for Krishna's pleasure. And when I think about that point, I think that each of us being individuals, we have our own gifts. And individual means individuality. So there is something unique and special about every individual, and each individual has their own unique personality and gift to be able to give to Krishna. So when we can do that, use our individuality fully in the service of Krishna, then we can give, in one sense, even though it sounds funny in one sense, but we can give Krishna something that no one else can give him. So therefore Krishna can have unlimited souls serving him and still get pleasure and have affection for each and every individual soul. How wonderful. How wonderful. And then when there's someone who is so averse to Krishna, he refuses to serve Krishna, even if he's a spiritualist and doesn't want to take any pleasure from the material world, jnanis, impersonalists, mayavadis. They would rather even destroy their individuality. They prefer to destroy their individuality rather than serve Krishna. So anything rather than serving Krishna, that's the mood, and therefore Krishna doesn't accept their prayers and their. Prabhupada even says that he was asked what is the definition of a mayavadi, or he was explaining what a mayavadi means, and he just said materialist. And he said there are two kinds of mayavadis. One who sees, who is a materialist, complete materialist, sees the world of maya as all in all, and the kind who are so-called spiritualists, who see that Krishna's own form and pastimes and Vrindavan Dham, it is just Maya, material. So different kinds of Mayavadis. But the residents of Vrindavan, they are not at all Mayavadis. Neither the grass, the dust, the cows, the calves, the servants who carry Krishna's flutes, because Krishna, the servants of Krishna are so expert, the ones who carry Krishna's flutes, because Krishna is so expert in his flute playing, and in every circumstance, and the servants will carry 100 flutes of Krishna, because at one circumstance he might want to play his Venu, which is very short and has a very high sound, and another time his Murli, and another time some Vamsi, a very, very deep, long, when he wants to call the gopis or something. So the servants, they're so expert at knowing the mind of Krishna that when he's in a circumstance and asks for a flute, they know just what flute he wants. So what does that mean? That means that they're always thinking, oh, what will please Krishna? What does Krishna want now? What will please Krishna? What is Krishna longing for now? What will please him? So that's the basis of Krishna consciousness. They're not thinking, if I give Krishna a jeweled flute, maybe he'll give me 2 jeweled flutes or something like that. They're not thinking like that. They're just actually, honestly, fully, full-heartedly thinking of what will be pleasing to Krishna. So at some point, just after Krishna arrives in Vrindavan. How old is Krishna at that time? Maybe 3 years old. Are there any 3-year-olds present? So we can get an idea of how tall a 3-year-old is. Maybe like this. Like this, maybe. No? Less or more? Like this? Somewhere in between. Okay. So very, very, very little. And at that time, because Vrindavan was so sweet and wonderful, even though Nanda Maharaj actually expressed, when Upananda, his elder brother, advised to go to Vrindavan, he agreed, although he said that my own personal preference is Mahavan. But since you are all in agreement, okay, we'll go. So Vrindavan was so sweet and wonderful that all the cowherd men, the cowherd girls, the ladies, the cows, they forgot about Mahavan when they were there. They were so enraptured, enchanted by Vrindavan itself. And Nanda Maharaj, he himself, even though he was the king, he would go out and herd the cows every day. And all the cowherd men, practically speaking, because they wanted to be with Nanda Maharaj, and of course they loved the cows. They weren't cattle ranchers. They weren't. They loved the cows. Later we'll hear how, when Krishna was herding the cows, when the cows were hungry, he felt hungry. When the cows were satisfied and happy, he felt satisfied and happy. There was such a strong bond. They were family members, practically speaking. So Nanda Maharaj would go out, take the cows, and little Krishna would go with him, and Balaram, because they loved the cows too. And Krishna would sit on Nanda Maharaj's lap, and sometimes the lap of the other elderly cowherd men or senior cowherd men. And, you know, he'd say, oh, what is this over here? What kind of tree is that? What is that? I've never seen one of those before. In little childish, broken language. And he would tease them, and they would tease him. And this was the time when it was the cowherd's men's time to just be with Krishna. Very, very sweet time. But Krishna and Balaram was so eager and had so much, they loved the cows so much, and they had cow herding deep within their blood. So even though the cowherd men said they shouldn't do it, they would run ahead in front of the herd, and they would cut off, not cut off, but they would separate 3 or 2 or 5 even cows from the rest of the herd, and they would just play with them and herd them off in their own way. And the cows were so huge compared to these little boys. But they knew how to do it. And sometimes you may see, even in the Govanant area, little children, maybe this, sometimes even this big, they'll hold a stick and they'll have 3 or 5 cows or buffaloes, and they're just going like this, and they're completely controlling them. They grow up in this way. So Krishna had this, the Supreme Lord had this consciousness, the consciousness of a cowherd boy. So, and then when he wanted the cows were going too fast and going in a wrong direction, he and Balaram would grab them by the horns and stop them, up to 5 of them at a time. This is the description of Srila Jiva Goswami. So Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, they were in a little bit of anxiety. But just imagine how much anxiety Mother Yashoda and Rohini were in. Complete anxiety. So one day, after some time, Mother Yashoda said to Nanda Maharaj, and she said, "Oh, why are you doing this unprecedented thing that this little boy is going and performing this very difficult activity of herding the cows? My breast milk is, practically speaking, still wet upon his lips, and look what you are letting him do. Do you think this is a good idea?" So when you ask a question like that, it's a polite way of saying, "Don't dare and do this, because it's too dangerous for the boys. Do you think this is a good idea?" And Nanda Maharaj, he agreed. So he told Krishna and Balaram that you can't go out anymore. It's just too dangerous. You're too little. The cows are so big, you can get hurt. They are powerful. Even by accident, if they step on your foot, their hard hooves, they weigh so much. So better that you stay home like before and play. But Krishna and Balaram, they cried and cried and cried with anxious hearts, because they wanted to do this. So one time even, without telling anyone, they secretly went out one of the back doors and went to find Nanda Maharaj in the forest with the cows, and then they took a wrong turn and they got lost, and they and the other boys all the boys wanted to do this. There's a certain period in a very little boy's life where he wants to escape from the house and just be with his friends and do things like that. So they were just playing in the pasturing grounds, but they were lost. They didn't know how to get back. They were playing cow herding, because that's what they loved. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram, they would take the goats, bakri, and they would make believe they were cows and milk them like that. And sometimes they would get milk, and sometimes they'd just go out like that. They would sneak away. So Nanda Maharaj saw that the plan to keep Krishna home wasn't working. And then finally, Krishna went to Mother Yashoda himself, and he said, "Mother, don't interfere with this cherished, heartfelt desire of mine to herd the cows. And I won't even listen to you, nor will I even consider your feelings about this. Please, I beg you. But he said it very sweetly and gently. But he said it nonetheless. I'm not going, I don't even care what you think about this. Please give me permission to herd the cows. My friends and I don't experience any hardship in doing this at all. It is not difficult for us. We love to do this. What could be more fun-filled pleasure in the whole world than being with the cows? It is the highest enjoyment for us. So, when Krishna approached Mother Yashoda in this way, she didn't say anything. She couldn't say anything. And Nanda Maharaj was very surprised that her mind had changed in this way. Of course, Krishna's yoga maya is influencing everyone. But Krishna himself, the way he presents things, is also with his eyes so beautiful and his moving back and forth and is so sincere when he presents everything. So Nanda Maharaj thought about this and he saw that Yashoda Maya was not protesting. And he thought of a good compromise, because after all, Krishna was so little. The compromise that he thought of was that Krishna would begin taking out the calves. Because the calves, after all, were so much smaller and less dangerous. They don't have huge bodies. And also, the calves are still drinking milk, and they don't go as far out into the forest. They come back much earlier in the day. They come back noontime or 11 o'clock. They go out early in the morning, come back 11, 12, 1, like that. So at that time, when Nanda Maharaj suggested this to Yashoda Maya, then she agreed. And it was decided that on an auspicious day, Krishna would begin to take out the calves with his friends. So, and Nanda Maharaj did this when he understood more or less that Krishna was going to do what he wanted anyway, and he had such an active nature and better engaged that active nature, and in that way at least they would stay close to the village. So, upon Mother Yashoda Maya and Nanda Maharaj explained this to Krishna, and Nanda Maharaj had a red staff, a stick that he could use for herding the calves. And on that auspicious day, Krishna was bathed and dressed in a wonderful day, and he was given ropes that were required, and he was given a bugle. Are there any buglers here? There are peacocks, I know, and there are cows, and perhaps a quail, cuckoo or two. But he was given a buffalo horn bugle, and he had his flute, and he had his stick. And at that time, because he was going to go out into the forest, he was given leather shoes, and he refused to use them. He said, this is against the dharma of the cowherd community. And when he refused, Balaram also refused. And when the earth herself understood that Krishna's lotus feet, his soft lotus feet, were going to be touching her, the earth herself felt so much jubilation, happiness, ecstasy in this thought, that she removed all the thorns and hard clumps of earth from the pathways of Vrindavan. And she especially used the cows to do this, with the hoofs of the cows. They would crush all the earth, the hard the earth clumps. so that Krishna's feet would not be inconvenienced at all. And sometimes when one wanders through Vrindavan, one finds parts of Vrindavan in the villagey areas that the dust is so thick and soft. And when one sees such dust of Vrindavan that's so thick and soft like powder, practically one can't help oneself. And one jumps in and rolls in the dust of Vrindavan. It is just completely natural. So Bhumi provided this very soft powder-like dust of Vrindavan, so his lotus, soft, tender lotus feet would not be hurt. So the auspicious day came, and the boys and the calves were going out. In every house in Vrindavan, every door of every house opened, and the ladies would offer aarti as Krishna and Balaram and the boys walked past, and they would sing wonderful songs about Krishna, and they would take flower petals at every door, and they would throw the petals, the soft petals, on the boys, Krishna, just to make everything auspicious. And the other boys also had with them horns and balls and wooden puppets. Srila Jiva Goswami says they had wooden puppets like the Daru Yantra. So this is, everything is for playing. And we see this tendency in the little boys, even nowadays, they like these little cars and little this and little that, and they like to move them around and organize them in that way. So the cowherd boys wanted to play, and they were well equipped to play. So as they left for the forest, all the boys and the calves, Krishna started showing his expertise in herding the calves, keeping them in groups and everything. And guess who followed the boys out? Yes, Maya Yashoda. Because she couldn't bear a moment to be without him. And as in when Balaram went out, excuse me, as when Krishna was cowherding for the first time, there was told the boys, Balaram, especially Balaram, as we heard in the Kaliya past, you please stay with Krishna. Don't let him out of your sight. Sridham, Sridham, you stay on this side. And Vijay, you stay on this side. And Dham and Vasudham, you stay on that side and protect Krishna. He has such a restless nature. And Krishna, when she would follow them out, in very, very soft words, he would say, Mother, just, we're okay. I know how to herd the calves. We've been doing this. And they would agree upon, I'll just go a little bit further. And then eventually Krishna would convince Mother Yashoda to stay behind. And then the boys could relax, because the boys can't play when the parents are around. That's the reality of the situation. So while Krishna was in the forest playing day by day with the calves, he would allow them to wander, and then he would herd them together in groups, and he would bring them to places where there was very succulent, very tasty, green, fresh grass. The calves would enjoy that. Then he would let them wander as they wanted. Then he would group them together. And day by day, as he did this, his luster, his sapphire colored bluish luster would increase. And he was becoming more and more beautiful. There's descriptions of how his beauty changes and shifts from one period of his life to the next. So he would walk from place to place, and then around 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, or 1 o'clock, and all the whole time Mother Yashoda would be sending out different fruits and refreshments, and with different of the servants. So and they would come back and they would say what Krishna was doing, and in this way she was able to keep her life together. And then around 12 o'clock or so, 1 o'clock, a special nurse would come out, or one of the servants would come out and say, Mother Yashoda says that you should come home now. And of course Krishna, Abhyayga, just soon I'll come, just don't worry, I'm coming. And then eventually they would come back. And then Mother Yashoda, she would immediately bring Krishna back and check all his limbs to make sure he was all right, bathe him with oil and cleanse him and dress him again. And in this way, she would feed him and put him to rest for some time. So in this way, Krishna began his calf herding pastimes. Now we are ready to hear some of the adventures that occurred. We've called this fourth class Removing Misery and Increasing Pleasure, which is a very good thing to do, obviously. And the 37th text, this is giving the preview of what's going to happen here. It's really the next test after that. Does anyone remember the last text that we read yesterday? Does anyone remember what that one was? Vrindavanam Govardhanam Yamuna Pula Nalicha Vriksha Sit Uttama Priti. When Krishna had arrived, he saw Govardhan Hill, he saw the bank of the Yamuna, he saw the dust of Vrindavan, and he and Rama experienced the greatest bliss in doing this. So then they went out calf herding. So 36 was that verse, Yamuna Pulana Vrindavanam Govardhanam. We've gone a little too far. Okay, this is where we want to be. Let's see if, yes. So one day, while the boys were herding the calves, they were enjoying like anything. And during this time, by the way, when Krishna was a calf herd boy, he started playing his flute. Just a little boy, and he became so expert in his flute playing that everyone was marveled by it. And then one day, while Krishna was herding the calves, and really herding the calves was an excuse to be out all day and playing, Kamsa was in his capital city of Mathura. One time, many, many, many years ago, the Adi Ganga Prasad from Loy Bazaar, the elderly man who's the cousin, the current people who run the Ganga Prasad shops in Loy Bazaar, their father, he would always be sitting in the shop. And he told me, this was in the early 80s, he told me that now he's passed away. And he told me that he never goes to Vrindavan. He never leaves Vrindavan. And I asked him, does that mean you don't even go to Mathura? And he said, why should I go to that place of Kamsa? But Kamsa really liked that place. Although he wasn't actually popular, even in Mathura, there is a little, but everyone would smile when they saw him. His Holiness Radha Govinda Maharaj tells a story that reminds me of this, is that there was one small village in somewhere, and there was a Qazi who was controlling the village. So at one point the Qazi's dog died. And everyone in the village went to the funeral. But then, later on, the Qazi died, and no one went to the funeral. So it's like that. When Kamsa is alive, everyone is smiling. Oh, so happy to see you. But soon as he is dead, everyone begins to cheer because he was such a demon. So Kamsa was sitting on his throne and lamenting and lamenting and lamenting. I think that this Krishna is the one. He is the son of Devaki, that my worshipable deity Durga said has already taken birth somewhere else. I think that it is Krishna who is the son of Vasudev. And I sent Putana to kill him. And although she had unlimited power, practically speaking, little Krishna killed her. And now I've heard from my spies that Krishna has moved with the cowherd men to Vrindavan forest. I have to be very clever to have him killed because he's so powerful. He thought for a few moments and he asked one servant to come. Who is Krishna most attracted to? Where does he show the most affection? And the servant replied, Krishna loves the calves. He immediately sent that servant away and called for another servant. This is the way of diplomacy. You don't let everyone know all your plans. They may have a little piece of your plan, but you don't let them know everything, because then they can destroy your plan. Part of being a person like King Kamsa is you can't trust anyone. So he called for another servant and he thought, bring Vatsasura to me. And that servant brought Vatsasura, who stood in front of Kamsa with folded hands, thinking that he is the king, I should obey him. And as soon as Kamsa saw Vatsasura, he thought of him like a drop of water, but very evil. And when he saw him, Srila Jiva Goswami explained that he was like dirt and melted into the drop of water because of his deep affection for Vatsasura, who was evil, because he was evil. And he said, my dear Vatsasura, I have so much affection for you, and I have a very important task for you, a mission. But to do this mission, you have to be very clever, not straightforward at all. You should disguise yourself as a calf. So at this point, even though his name was Vatsasura, it doesn't appear that he was in the form of a calf. But you should disguise yourself as a calf and kill Krishna. He explained where Krishna was playing, not far from the Chatikara area, Vatsa Krida it is called, because the cows would play there. And Vatsasura assumed the shape of a calf. And while Krishna was herding the calves, Vatsasura very cleverly placed himself amongst the other calves. And Krishna was looking at all the calves, and he saw a calf that didn't belong at all. And he went very, very slowly and casually to Daoji, Sri Balaramji, and he said, "Did you notice that there's one calf there that didn't come with us this morning?" And Balaram said, "No, I didn't notice. Look over there." Balaram very slowly and casually turned, and he saw that there was one calf that was staring with eyes filled with hatred. And he saw that one calf was alone, and the other calves, just by smell, recognized that he is one to be avoided. And Balaram said, "Yes, I see him now." And Krishna said, "I think he's a demon. With your permission, I will kill him." And Balaram said, "It has to be done in such a way that we don't evoke the criticism of others. Because after all, he's in the form of a calf, and Krishna loves the calves. And if anyone harmed a calf or a cow, in the cowherd community or anywhere, they would be immediately in deep, deep trouble. This is so sinful." So Balaram suggested that Krishna act in a very, very careful and very clever way. So Krishna made some sounds, those cowherd boy sounds. And Srila Jiva Goswami describes them as like a stuttering sound. That means repeating of the same syllable, like hee-hee-hee. But I can't even begin to imitate it. But he made the sound of hee-hee-hee. And all the calves came over. And that calf came with them, thinking, "This is my chance." So Krishna took the first calf in front of him and began to stroke him with his lotus-like hand and pat him with his behind the ears. And wherever there is any itching, he would stroke, and he would massage his legs as well. And then he would call him by his name, and then he would take the next calf and massage him. And in this way, he was stroking all the calves, and he was moving closer to this calf, who was Vatsasura. And Vatsasura was thinking, "He trusts me." And Krishna was thinking, "He trusts me." So when he got to, when it was Vatsasura's turn, Vatsasura stood there and lifted his neck, and Krishna began, he held his legs, but tightly. And he immediately picked him up and began swinging him around and around and around and around and around, until the demon could not maintain his form as a calf anymore. And then Krishna killed him by throwing him into a nearby bel tree or kapita bel tree. And at the same time as he did this, all the bel fruits fell to the ground so the boys could eat them. So Krishna is very, very clever when he acts. So many things are accomplished with one activity. And all the boys, seeing the demon, were so surprised. And they went to Krishna. Krishna has done it again. And they went to Krishna and embraced him. "Congratulations, Krishna. You should have told us. We would have done it this." Oh, Krishna, so wonderful. And then later on, not on the same day, this is described in one verse after the next. Later on, not on the same day, they were in one of a different forest, a minor forest called Kadiravan, which we more or less pass when we go from Chatikara Road to Govardhan. When we end up at Radhakund, there's a forest on the right that Srila Lokanath Das Goswami did his bhajan there, and there's a lake there. And Lokanath Das Goswami used to have his didi with him always around his neck. What is Lokanath Das Goswami's didi called? Gokulananda. Right, Gokulananda. So in that very forest, by a lake, Krishna and the boys and the calves were moving very peacefully. And another demon sent by Kamsa appeared. Kamsa had been lamenting in his city of Mathura. And he asked his ministers, he sat there like this, what to do with his eyes closed, what to do. And he called for his ministers and asked them, everyone is being killed, these powerful friends of mine are being killed, what should I do? And they all said, Bakasura. And Kamsa said, yes, he is close to me, and he is the most wicked of all. So Bakasura was waiting there for the boys in the shape of a huge, sometimes it is said, duck or a crane. Not the kind of cranes that lift blocks not that kind of a crane, but that huge bird. And recently, when in very close to that area, there was one devotee, Janardhan, and he said, I went there, and I saw these big birds there, and they were 5 feet tall. And I said, no. So we went there the next day to see if these huge birds were there. And then we saw one. But he was 1,000 feet tall, or maybe a little less. But actually, they were 4.5 feet tall. They were huge. But Bakasura was still even more huge, with his long legs and his huge body with his head hanging down. He was a huge baka crane. And the boys saw him. And Krishna saw him there. What is that? A new mountain has come to Braja? The coward boys lifted their sticks. Krishna actually wanted to come closer and closer to him. And the boys moved closer and closer with Krishna. And then suddenly, that Bakasura swooped down and he grabbed Krishna in his beaks. And he tried to swallow Krishna. And he was huge, and he was powerful, and he was wicked. And he had Krishna in his mouth. The Bhagavatam says, when Krishna was in that condition, the boys fainted, and Balaram almost fainted. Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say, Balaram fainted. Balaram, who knows the power of Krishna, still could not tolerate seeing Krishna in that position, that condition. In a similar way that when Krishna kidnaps Rukmini and the armies are chasing Krishna, the armies of the opposing kings, Balaram's there with the Yadu army because he cannot tolerate seeing Krishna in a difficult circumstance, because that is his mood, that is his bhavana. And his mood of love is so powerful that it overcomes his knowledge of Krishna's Aishwarya, his opulence. How strong is the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna? Mother Yashoda experiences this too. She sees the universal form in Krishna's abdomen. She sees the universe. And still, it doesn't overpower her love for him. And she thinks, whatever he is, he still has, should not eat dirt. He's so restless, so naughty. So, Balaram and the boys fainted, and Krishna became so hot, like flames, and Bakasura spit him out. He could not contain him in his mouth. And then, with his beaks, he tried to peck at Krishna and poke him with his huge, powerful, pointed beaks. And just as Bhima had split apart Jarasandha, Krishna, as easily as a child splits a blade of grass, split those beaks of Bakasura. And Bakasura died. And the coward boys were thrilled. Now, no? 2 minutes. Okay. We need it for one special verse that's coming. Especially. But I'll just read what's going on over here. As I said, when Balaram and the other boys saw that Krishna had been devoured by the gigantic duck, the gigantic baka, they became almost unconscious, like senses without life. But immediately, as soon as Krishna was out of, everyone came back to consciousness. And when he was, when Bakasura was killed, everyone was so happy. Even the devatas, they became thrilled. And suddenly, kettle drums began to sound. That doesn't sound like a kettle drum. Didn't you bring the... I told you to bring the kettle drum with you. No. Okay, I forgot. And conchals and prayers were offered by the devatas, and the coward boys were wondering, what is all this? So then... And this is where we'll begin if it comes back on. Is it almost ready? Dominant. Okay, I know what that means. So, Srila Sukadev Goswami is narrating, just as the senses are pacified, made peaceful when consciousness and life returns, so when Krishna was freed from this danger, all the boys, including Balaram, thought that their life had been restored. They embraced Krishna and they collected their own calves and they returned to Brajabhumi where they sang and spoke of this incident very loudly. And when the cowherd men and women heard about the killing of Bakasura in the forest, they were very much astonished. And upon seeing Krishna and hearing the story, they receive Krishna very eagerly, thinking that Krishna and the other boys had returned from the mouth of death. So much rasa, love and feeling and affection and emotion is generated by these pastimes. And they looked at Krishna and the boys with silent eyes, not wanting to turn their eyes aside. They just stared at Krishna. They couldn't help it. They stared at Krishna without turning their eyes aside now that the boys were safe. Mother Yashoda, she went to Krishna after hearing this and said, "Oh, you are the son of the king. You don't have to go out and herd the cows. The servants can do this. Everywhere, every time you go out, practically speaking, there is one problem or another problem or one attack. You don't go out. Please don't go out anymore." And Krishna said, "There was no problem today. The boys just made up the stories about Bakasura. Nothing actually happened today. They're just lying. Don't worry, Mother. And what have you cooked for me to eat today?" So in this way, also the cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, began to contemplate that it is very astonishing that although this boy Krishna has many times faced many varied causes of death, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it was these causes of fear that were killed instead of him. Although the causes of death, the daityas, the demons, were very fierce, they could not kill this boy Krishna. Rather, because they came to kill innocent boys, as soon as they approached, they themselves were killed, exactly like flies attacking a fire. So, despite everything that was happening, they could not conceive that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. It was the Lord who protected Krishna because he's such a wonderful boy. And because Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda are praying so much and worshipping Lord Narayan, but not that he's the Supreme Lord. And then they said, "The words of persons in full knowledge of Brahman never become untrue. It is very wonderful that whatever Garga Charja, Garga Muni predicted, we are now actually experiencing it all in full detail." Because Garga Charja had said, "Narayano Samo Gunai," he has the qualities of Lord Narayan. So therefore, he is protected by Lord Narayan all the time. Lord Narayan's qualities enter into him. So in this way, please repeat after I say the verses. Iti nanda dayo gopa. Krishna rama katamudam. Rama katamuda. Kurvanto rama manascha. Navinda Bhava Vedanam. So in this way, all the cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram. Krishna Ramakatha. They would just talk and talk and talk and speak about Krishna and Balaram and the activities of Krishna, and it never became old or stale for them because of their great love for Krishna. And their talking caused in them great transcendental pleasure. And because of that, they could not even perceive, they had no material experience at all. They were floating and swimming on the waves of Krishna Katha continuously. So they experience no material tribulations. What does material tribulations mean? What? Yeah, I wanted to make it easier. Yes, that's true. But what's an easier word than tribulations? Misery, suffering, difficulties. What else? And nothing. They were just floating. And even when they had things that appeared to be like material experiences, like they would say, "I'm hungry," or something like that, or "When is Krishna's late? I'm worried about him." These things were not actually miseries at all. They were just part of the internal energy, and it would nourish their transcendental experiences about Krishna. So then sometimes, because they were always talking about Krishna. All the cowherd men were talking about Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that sometimes some elderly people would come, elderly men would come from distant villages, and they would say, "Why are you always talking about your family and your children and your house? You have passed 50% of your life already. You should be absorbed in sacrifices and austerities, and you should be thinking about Lord Narayan." And Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men would not pay any attention to them because they were just completely absorbed in Krishna. And they hadn't, and there was no question of them having any material experience at all. Of course, they were fully Krishna conscious. Now, I wanted to read Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. And then after that, we shall turn to Giriraj. Now, this really shows Prabhupada, the mood that Prabhupada exhibited. Here, in this way, all the here is an instruction about the result of studying or discussing Krishna's leelas that appear in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sadhyo ridya avarudyate atra kritibhi shatrushabhis takshanat. Takshanat means immediately. By hearing about Krishna, studying the Bhagavatam, Krishna appears in the heart immediately. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda in Vrindavan appeared like ordinary persons of this material world, but they never felt the tribulations of this world, although they sometimes met many dangerous situations created by the demons. This is a practical example. Prabhupada is saying that we should follow this practical example. If we follow in the footsteps of Nanda Maharaj and the gopas, we can all be happy simply by discussing the activities of Krishna. Anartha upasamam sakshad bhakti yoga madhokshaje lokasya ajanato vidvam chakre satvita samhita. Vyasadev has given us this literature, so that everyone may understand one's transcendental position simply by discussing Bhagavad Katha. Even at the present moment, everyone everywhere can be happy and free from material tribulation by following Srimad Bhagavatam. There is no need of austerities and penances, which in this age are very difficult to perform. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was therefore declared Sarvatma Snaparam Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. By our Krishna consciousness movement, we are trying to distribute Srimad Bhagavatam so that anyone in any part of the world can be absorbed in the Krishna consciousness movement by chanting and hearing about the activities of Krishna and be freed from all material tribulations. Please notice how Prabhupada is equating the Krishna consciousness movement with the chanting and hearing of Krishna Katha, and of course the distribution of Krishna Katha in the form of his books. But Prabhupada, I once even heard him say this. He was imitating a book distributor and said, "Please take this book." And then he imitated the person who was taking the book and said, "What's it about?" And then he imitated the book distributor and said, "I don't know. It's for you." And Prabhupada then said, "It is not an export business." that the books are supposed to pass through us without deep relish itself. So relish Srimad Bhagavatam. Hear the pastimes of Krishna. Enter into the moods. Understand to whatever degree we are capable of the sweetness of Brajalila. And for the strength to do that, the incarnations and all the whole Bhagavatam is full of Krishna Katha. And for the strength to do that, let us now turn to Giriraj and chant the names of Krishna. Please be merciful to us, Giriraj Govardhan. We may be disqualified in so many ways, but you are so kind, and you give shelter to everyone. So please be kind to us as we chant your names.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Hare, Hare, Hare Rama. Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, 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 Rama, Hare, Krishna, Krishna, Hare, 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 Rama, Hare, Rama, Rama, Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, 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 Rama, Rama,
Chant loudly. Loudly call out to Giriraj.
Hare Krishna, Krishna.
Oh Giriraj Govardhan.
Giriraj Govada.
Hare Krishna.
Everyone clap.
Hare Krishna. Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, Hare.
Everyone. Giriraj can hear you, which means sincerely chant.
Thank you.
Krishna, we'll just speak just for a few more moments. There's one point that I wanted to make. That Sukadeva Goswami continues. That by the, he's just described how the residents of Vrindavan have, just by being absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, were not in the material world, and their whole consciousness was this absorption in Krishna. And from my own experience, I've noted that we have such a way, or I have such a way of taking something that's spiritual and using it to absorb my consciousness in matter. And that's exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. Everything that's matter should be seen in relationship to Krishna and be absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, not in thoughts of me separate from Krishna and just me and mine. But the perfection of that me and mine is that, who is this me? I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. So the residents of Vrindavan were fully on that platform of pure, affectionate, Krishna is ours. Krishna is ours, even more than I am Krishna's. That is the speciality of Braja. Even more than thinking I am Krishna's, the residents of Vrindavan naturally, spontaneously, with full love, think that Krishna is mine, he is ours. So these playful cowherd boy pastimes continue. Calf herd boys, this is still the realm of calf herding, but Krishna is moving towards cow herding. One day Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. That means that he would be away from home even longer. Mother Yashoda did not like this idea, but Krishna was strong and determined. He wanted to have a picnic in the forest. And this is the seed of the Brahma Vamohana Lila, which begins in the next chapter. So he rose early in the morning, and he blew his bugle made of a horn, and he woke all the cowherd boys and calves with its beautiful sound. With the sound of Krishna's bugle, he called, as he does with his flute, he calls his friends by their very names. He puts a mystical mantra in his flute playing. It is said, and his bugle playing, that the liquid nectar of his lips comes out in the form of this of the sound vibrations coming from Krishna, his flute or his bugle. And each of the boys, he would call them one by one by their names. He would go to their doors and say, "Oh, Sridham, oh, Dham, oh, Vasudham, come now. We're going to the forest. Come, come. We're having a picnic." And he told them the day before so that their mothers would cook and all the boys came out. Of course, they weren't really sleeping at all because they could not sleep. Every few minutes, practically speaking, they'd be coming, calling at Krishna's door, even in the middle of the night. "Oh, Krishna, come, it's late, we should go out and play now, let's go and herd the calves." And Mother Yashoda would come to the window and say, "Can't you see that it's the middle of the night? Go home and rest, and when the sun rises..." "Oh, Mother, oh, Maya, I didn't notice, I'm so sorry for causing a disturbance. I will go home now. Please forgive me." Then they'd go home, and then in another half hour, "Oh, Krishna, come out, come out. It is time to go." Because they missed Krishna so much. This inconceivable love of the Brijbasis for Krishna was overflooding and overwhelming them continuously. So Krishna blew his horn, made a buffalo horn, and he woke up all the boys and calves with its beautiful sounds. And then the boys and Krishna, keeping their respective groups of calves before them, proceeded from Brajabhumi to the forest. So the boys would bring their calves out separately, and they would merge into the big herd of calves or cows. And then when they would come back at night, they would each, the calves would go their own way. So this was their life with Krishna, with the calves, in the atmosphere of Vrindavan. The atmosphere was, practically speaking, prema of Krishna. Everything, everyone loves Krishna in Vrindavan. There are no things, actually. There are different living entities, and they all love Krishna. Krishna is the center. And at that time, hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys came out of their respective homes in Brajabhumi, and Krishna went to every door and embraced each and every one of them. "Oh, Vasudham, let's go. Oh, Sridham, let's go." They joined Krishna, and they kept before them their hundreds and thousands of groups of calves. The boys were very beautiful, and they were equipped with lunch bags, bugles, flutes, and sticks for controlling the calves. Now, in this verse, did you notice how many calves came out? There were hundreds and thousands of boys, and each boy had thousands of calves. Now, in Sanskrit, the word used here, well, that's actually in the next verse. Along with the cowherd boys and their own groups of calves, Krishna came out with a sankirtan, an unlimited number. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur defines this asankhya, which means, sankhya means counting. So asankhya means uncountable. So he defines it as I think it's one followed by 17 zeros. So that's, this is the amount of calves that come. This is Krishna's calves. Then all the boys began to sport in the forest in a greatly playful spirit. Now read the next verse and we'll speak about Asankhya and the ramifications of this. Although all these boys were already decorated by their mothers with ornaments of kacha, means some gems, gunja berries, necklaces and earrings, pearls and gold, when they went to the forest of Vrindavan, they further decorated themselves with fruits, leaves, green leaves, bunches of flowers, peacock feathers, and soft minerals. Now, I won't speak about this right now, but I want to speak about Asankhya. There were unlimited camps, and practically speaking, unlimited boys. Now, is this possible? Huge bakas and demons in the shape of calves and witches, putanas that expand themselves, they change their form and expand themselves to 8 miles in size. The scientifically trained intelligence may think, what a nice story this is. But is it possible? Asankhya, uncountable calves, for example? Now, Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, he addresses this point of the doubts that may come to the mind when we're thinking about Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's Leela and this little boy who's unlimitedly powerful and unlimitedly beautiful. He says, Brahma means unlimited. And Krishna is the supreme unlimited, the Parabrahma. Therefore, we should not consider the statements of this verse to be mythological, just stories made up. They are factual, but they're inconceivable. When speaking about the absolute truth, the all-powerful, unlimitedly powerful, all-inclusive, absolute truth, the creator of everything in existence, the maintainer of everything in existence, the destroyer of everything spiritual, material, naturally, we would think that we cannot understand him fully. Inconceivable. Achintya Shakti. There's no meaning to the concept of the Ishwara of God without accepting Achintya Shakti. Krishna can accommodate an unlimited number of calves and an unlimited measurement of space. This is neither mythological nor false. But if we study Krishna's potency with our limited knowledge, according to our own experience, just by what we know, I've seen a baka that's 4.5 feet tall, but I haven't seen one as big as a mountain. If I study it just by my own experience and my own intelligence with my limited knowledge, that potency of my own capacity, and this is what Brahma finds out very, very soon. Now the hint is there, but in Brahma's prayers, in Brahma Vamohana Leela, he is confronted with this because Krishna exhibits to his eyes an unlimited number of unlimited Vishnus that all have unlimited capacity, an unlimited number of unlimited entities, beings, expand from Krishna, and each one of those unlimited number have unlimited capacity, and Krishna's potency isn't decreased at all, and he's standing there as just like a calf herd boy, as he is now. He's not even big enough to herd the cows. The material intelligence cannot fathom this, understand this. With our limited knowledge, we simply don't have the potency, the power to understand the absolute truth. But does that mean that the absolute truth cannot be understood? Does that mean that because we can't understand it, it's true? It doesn't mean that anything ununderstandable is true. Anything that's not understandable is not necessarily true. But Krishna can be understood. But the methodology for understanding him is not by the use of one's intelligence alone. It is not possible to understand the infinite with the finite. The Brahman with the Supreme Brahman with my own potency. So Prabhupada then explains, quoting from Srila Rupa Goswami, the process of understanding. And it is Ataksi Krishna Nama Di Naba Ved Grayam Indriya Sevan Mukihi Jivada Swayam Eva Sparatyado. Our methodology has to change. Otherwise, Krishna's pastimes will appear just like very cute little stories to us. And that methodology that has to change is the methodology of the heart, bhakti. Not the mundane heart or mundane sentiment, but we have to become true bhaktis and bhaktins. That means sevan mukhi jivadao. Our consciousness has to change in the concept of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada quoting, that instead of thinking, I want to see Krishna, I want to see Krishna, Krishna come to me, I want to see you, reveal yourself to me, and therefore I'll have faith and trust. No, by adopting the methodologies of bhakti, which means a serving mood and trying to please Krishna, then swayam eva sparatyadao. Then Krishna, by his kindness and mercy, reveals himself to the devotees. And according, proportionately to how much we develop our bhakti, we can enter into the spiritual realms with spiritual consciousness. We can't enter in with our material consciousness. If we have spiritual consciousness, we are there. And Krishna is everywhere for us, and his pastimes are revealed continuously to us. And if we don't have spiritual consciousness, then no matter how hard we look and no matter how much we scrutinize and try to understand, all we will get is doubts. So what is paramount, most important, is to develop spiritual consciousness if we wish to enter into the spiritual realm and be enriched by that understanding. And it is obvious, when approaching fire, we cannot be ice. We cannot even be flesh and blood to approach fire. We will burn. We cannot get close. It will destroy us. But to approach fire, we have to become fire. To approach the spiritual realm, Goloka Vrindavan, we have to develop the heart, the Vaishnava heart, Vaishnava consciousness, spiritual consciousness, bhakti. And that comes by the basic processes that we all know very well, by chanting Krishna's names, primarily by hearing about Krishna and then chanting about Krishna and serving. Ataksi Krishna, namadi nabhaved graham indira. And then by the serving mood, Krishna's reciprocation with the serving mood, then by his divine grace, then more and more and more we are able to see. Our senses, Prabhupada says, cannot perceive how we could keep unlimited number of calves and cows and have unlimited space in which to do so. So we are here specifically in this very, very, very holy place, and that even Prabhupada has even said in the Krishna book that in Vrindavan, even a non-devotee, a person without devotion, can experience separation from Krishna. So we are here as beggars, or at least not, I shouldn't say we, here as beggars. And when we chant Krishna's names, if we can infuse that chanting with a slight bit or a lot of a mood of begging, that a beggar is a poor man. A beggar is a poor man, has no wealth, and he has understood that wealth is outside of him and he doesn't have any. So here, possessing no bhakti, feeling like that, the devotees chant and chant and chant and call out to Giriraj, call out to the dust of Vrindavan, call out to the great Vaishnavas, call out to the Hare Krishna, calling out with the mood of a beggar or the mood of a baby needing the tender care of mother. And in that way, Krishna's very soft heart and Giriraj's very magnificent mood becomes manifest to us by his divine grace, by their divine grace. So when I read Asankhya, when I was preparing for this, I thought, is it really possible? And Prabhupada answered that question in his purport. No, as long as you limit yourself by your own limitations. But if you adopt the glasses, the lenses of bhakti, of what to speak of prema bhakti, then it is not that you can see Vrindavan in one place only. And that was Prabhupada's secret of preaching. That was his secret in preaching, that he carried this place, the mood of this place, the sweetness of Braja with him, because he carried Radha and Krishna in a complete serving mood, and he was so much surrendered to his service. He was so surrendered to serving. Ataksi Krishna Namadi Nabhave Sevan Mukhi Hi Jivadao. He was a surrendered, loving Vrijbasi servant. And we who are trying, all servants of Prabhupada, servants of Prabhupada, followers, we have such an opportunity to he would do anything. He would do anything. He would walk through fire. As he said in that other verse, obstacles, difficulties, this will come. But he would walk through fire to please his Guru Maharaj and Krishna. So we might not be given, he was very unique in what he did. No one can ever do that again, what he accomplished. And his glories will be more and more and more and more appreciated and known as time goes on. But we can become servants in this mood and find some service to do and give ourselves to that service. And then get some good quality blessings. Okay, past time. Okay, we will stop now. And please take prasadam, little rest, relax, stretch. And 7 o'clock we will begin again. Because Krishna has escaped from the coils of Kaliya. And something wonderful will occur. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. The residents of Vrindavan ki jai. Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai.